Well, good morning. I want to say what a distinct honor it is to be invited to be here and to attend my first ASA meeting. I'm a fairly regular attender of ESA meetings, the Ecological Society of America meetings. And of course, I'm impressed by the differences between the groups, but I'm even more impressed by the similarities of the groups. In particular, the sense of idealism expressed by a large number of people, and the passion behind the discipline. And I think that the Ecological Society and ecological scientists have a lot to gain by collaborating with agronomists and vice versa. Okay, may I have the first slide, please? And here's the advancer. Okay. So I'm introducing the concept of high diversity, low diversity systems versus low input, high diversity systems. The latter term, as you might know, was coined by David Tillman to describe the use of diverse systems as a feedstock, though he was certainly not the first person to introduce this sort of idea, just the term. There's been quite a number of presentations about corn or other high input, low diversity crops as feedstocks. And there's been a number of concerns raised about the sustainability. Number one has been the question of favorability of the energetics. Now, as you know, there's been some papers such as Pimentel and Padzek who have been criticized, probably justly so. Even if you're not a big fan in energy return over energy invested as a statistic, these sorts of issues really must be considered when we deal with yielding energy from an energy crop. Probably many of you are also familiar with the science paper by Rigolato and Sprocklin, in which land conversion for a planting of dedicated biofuels crop is very likely to be a far greater problem, creating more greenhouse gas emissions and more warming potential than simply using the biofuels, than simply using the fossil fuels that it's intending to displace. Land conversion is not a hypothetical issue. A record amount of virgin soil is being turned in the northern Great Plains, and at least according to this author, it largely is due to biofuels feedstock production. And recent reports are showing that that other virgin soil is being plowed further south, such as in the Flint Hills region as well. And why are we concerned about this? Well, not just because we're losing a very precious resource, the virgin soil, for scientific as well as climatic needs, but it's sod busting is invariably associated with enhanced soil respiration. We're losing all that carbon that's been stored over millennia, and the loss of stored carbon also causes an increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide, not to mention nitrous oxides. And speaking of nitrous oxides or laughing gas, probably most of you have seen the report by Paul Crutzen, the Nobel Prize winner in chemistry. And he argues, using fairly unconventional means, that nitrous oxide released from agrobiofuel production negates the global warming reduction by replacing fossil fuels. Even if you use different techniques, it might not be a complete negation, but it still is a very serious problem, a very serious issue that must be considered. As you know, N2O has about 290 times the warming potential of a single molecule of carbon dioxide. So simply talking about carbon as the only relevant issue for climate change, it simply isn't relevant. I mean, we have to consider all relevant greenhouse gases. Very fittingly, for our location right here, the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico has been expanding dramatically. And apparently, according to reports by NASA and others, this is enhanced by the increased acreage of continuous corn in the upper Midwest. It's visible from the air and from the ground where we have excess eutrophication. And it's an awful lot of nitrogen. $750 million worth of nitrogen goes down the Mississippi annually. That's more than being used for all nitrogen in sub-Saharan Africa. Furthermore, our water resources are at risk. Many of the areas that are being considered for growing high-input maize are relying on fossil water, water that has a very slow replenishment rates. And there's a number of reports, including this one, on that subject. Probably the biggest political hot button globally right now are the oil palm plantations. If you notice the photograph on the right, you can still see the stems of rotting or burnt rainforest trees, and clearly a vast amount of carbon has been released for clearing the way for oil palm plantations. And of course, the activists and the people who are very interested in preserving tropical rainforests have been very quick to pick up on this issue, though of course not quick enough to prevent the problems. So you'll see all sorts of interesting publicity about the issue. But talking with real conservationists and scientists, not just the publicists, it is really a matter for concern. The people in the field are seeing expansions at the risk of natural resources. Another major concern that is continually being raised is the invasive capability of biofuels crops. This particular report comes from Australia, but there are other reports in the literature as well. And of course, breeding sterile hybrids sounds like a good idea. It's rarely 100% effective, but also we're increasingly finding lateral gene flow in grasses, and it's not a well-understood phenomenon, but lateral gene flow seems to be rampant. Of course, perennial cellulosic feedstocks such as switchgrass do have some advantages, but they're still high-input monocultures with some unique problems, which we could get into later if we're interested. But the main point is introducing vast new monocultures may be a mistake for a number of different reasons. Of course, emergent diseases and pests are one possibility. Unstable production, costly in terms of energetics as well as money and initial establishment. And the initial conversion is probably the number one issue, meaning more soil respiration and nitrous oxides. And as a result of these multitude of concerns, there's been quite a number of people who have raised concerns, raised very warning flags. The big myth that's out there is that the main opponents of HILD biofuels are big oil companies. You'll notice in this list not just fringe environmental organisms, environmental organizations. All organizations are sort of like organisms in some ways or another. But take, for example, Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank. Stratfor has been considered the shadow CIA or the private CIA. We've got hunger organizations. We've got clean air organizations. So it really is a diverse group of people who are concerned about this major change that's being forced upon our landscape. So I'm going to present an alternative, LIHD grasslands. High diversity systems allow complementarity. If you grow more than one species together, it allows differences in resource use among species, a well-understood, well-documented phenomenon in plant ecology. It allows the use of spontaneous biomass. If the world is trying to give you biomass, why spray it to get rid of it? It allows easy incorporation of nitrogen fixers. They're probably already there. Very importantly, it includes added ecosystem services, low inputs, stability of production, in general, variance of productivity decreases as a function of the number of species increases. Biocides become irrelevant. They have trivial greenhouse gas emissions. and very high potential for carbon sequestration. And of course, I don't have enough time to justify all of these points here, but a surprising number of them have been justified already by yesterday's poster session and other talks that I've seen here today, or in this meeting. And I thank Ken Moore for yesterday providing this quote, "The biggest, meanest dog will win." This was used to try to explain why mixtures of grasses won't work, because you end up with a monoculture anyway. Well, that's actually called the insurance hypothesis, is the more species you start out with, the more likely you'll find a winner in the group. And the key point here is that what wins one year is not necessarily the winner the next year or 10 years from now. So having a diverse set of species in a group means more likelihood for sustained production. The basic premise behind LIHD is to let nature do the heavy lifting. I'm now going to digress a little bit to describe a case study of hay meadows in Oklahoma. And as you can see from the sign, many of them are being sold and are disappearing for development. Abandonment of grassland is rampant in the southern Great Plains, and they result in degraded systems of low value. I've been having a hard time getting statistics about the acreage of that, but it really is a tremendous portion of the landscape. Cedars, eastern red cedar, Juniperus virginiana, rapidly invades unmanaged grasslands. They can become a severe fire danger. Many of these cedar newly founded forests are right upwind of major metropolitan areas. They alter hydrology because they're transpiring year-round and they're vastly depleting water resources. They reduce biological diversity. They increase erosion rates, soil erosion, and as many of you know, visited this area, they cause severe allergies, and the list can go on. And this is, even though this is a case study, woody plant encroachment is causing problems of similar magnitude in many parts of the world. But isn't harvesting our native grasslands deleterious to biological diversity? And the answer is no, is many grasslands, in fact, almost all productive grasslands, developed under a regime of biomass removal, either due to fire or due to grazing animals. And removing whatever agent removes biomass causes a rapid loss of biological diversity and a conversion to other land use types. And mowing is a historically important part of grassland management. So for the example, the Lailatu wooded meadow of Estonia has been documented to be mowed by scythe, or more recently by machinery, for over three centuries. This area has the record highest diversity of plants per square meter, much higher than the tropical rainforests. A much larger acreage of the meadows of the White Carpathian Mountains in Moravia. These have been documented to have been mowed continuously for half a millennium, probably a lot longer. And why was it mowed? As a transportation biofuel to feed the horses of Vienna and other major metropolitan areas. This area has 40 species of orchids alone, extremely high diversity. So in many cases in nature conservation, the cuttings are considered waste. They're mowed nowadays strictly for conservation because not as many people are riding horses anymore. So the take-home message here is why not use them? Here's one of my own studies, a mowing experiment in western Payne County. Here we're mowing in different seasons of the year and different combinations of seasons of the year. This project was established more from the point of view of biological diversity. The blue lines on the bottom are the unmowed controls, and the other three lines are different mowing treatments. And so you have higher native plant diversity where you have regular mowing. Okay. And this finding of enhanced biodiversity is not just a quirk of this this particular study. It's a near universal finding. There's very few other examples. Well, the question is, will hay meadows with complex species mixtures work as feedstocks? And of course, as you know, the harvesting technology is not new. There's just subtle adjustments. And there seem to be few technological hurdles, though there are some, for syngas, pelletization, and cellulosic conversion. There's other side benefits. Feedstock harvests may make control of exotic species, such as Johnson grass or Sericea, cost-effective. You reduce the dominant species and you allow the other species to come to the front. Multi-use systems are possible, given the time, I'll skip to the next slide. But I'll talk in particular about the creation of flower-rich meadows being potentially quite advantageous. Here's a quote: in order to sustain the abundance and diversity of insect pollinators in intensely farmed agricultural landscapes, we suggest the preservation of the remaining semi-natural grasslands or recreation of flower-rich grasslands is essential. Although this quote is from Europe, recently it's been estimated that pollinator services accounts for approximately $14.6 billion per year in the United States. However, pollinators are in a state of extremely dramatic decline, so restoring flower-rich systems has other evaluations. So in terms of evaluating the systems, of course we need to consider yield, and that's a concern. Nitrogen use efficiency, water use efficiency, energy efficiency, carbon sequestration, and the other ecosystem services, which include the co-products, what Henry Thompson described yesterday as value-added agriculture, such as supporting pollinator services. Serious consideration of LAHT can benefit basic and theoretical ecology, as other disciplines have advanced in the past due to energy. And so the conclusions are an equation, a need to decrease dependence on fossil fuels for environmental and geopolitical stability, plus abandoned grasslands leading to environmental health and public safety problems, plus serious concerns about HILD biofuels crops, and its lettuce user diverse grasslands as a source of biofuels to protect them for a sustainable economy and environment. And to conclude, I do have a little blog on LAHD, which you can get at this particular address. So.